Welcome to the daily full show podcast of the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
The Power Station.
And now, right across Australia, it's time for Luke Grant, filling in for Ray Hadley.
And a very good morning. Welcome to the Ray Hadley Morning Show. It's Wednesday, the third day of June in 2015. So again, I hear you ask, what are you doing there? Well, we all had crossed fingers and other bits that Ray would be well enough to be here today. But sadly, with little or no voice and feeling pretty lousy, the best thing for him was another day resting up. He's got a busy time ahead. So we're all hoping, as you are all hoping, he'll be well tomorrow and back on air in the morning. And in the meantime, we'll keep things ticking along in here for him. So having said that, let me say this. Great to be with you on 2GB, 4BC and 2CC. Weather today, cold again in many parts of Ray's listening area. Sydney, mostly sunny, around 17. Brisbane today, mostly sunny, tops of around 21. And in Canberra today, a top of 13. Another severe morning frost in the nation's capital earlier today. We'll check all the other weather very soon. In Ray's absence, the rules are the same, of course, no matter where you're listening. Our telephone number remains 131873. And if you want to get to us via email, go to 2gb.com, 4bc.com.au and click on those respective feedback icons. Plenty again for us to talk about today. I know Ray would make the point I'm about to make, were he on air today, about this story from the Australian, John Ferguson. He tells us Bishop Mulcairns was accompanied in Sydney by successor Peter Connors as they celebrated an annual dinner for retired bishops. Now, why is that important? Well, his attendance has raised eyebrows among some senior church figures amid expectations he would avoid attendance at the Child Abuse Royal Commission, as he did with the Victorian Parliamentary Inquiry in 2013, citing his health. Now, the attendance of Bishop Connors by Mulcairn's side is significant because the church entrusted him with trying to resolve the bitter fallout caused by the child abuse that occurred across Western Victorian Diocese during Mulcairn's 26-year reign. Hundreds of children were abused in the Diocese of Ballarat during the 60s, 70s and, sadly, the 80s. Mulcairn's has been accused by two inquiries of being aware of offending and, in at least one prominent case, of allowing the perpetrator to be moved from parish to parish, allowing him to continue to offend. Now, 2013, an independent neuropsychological assessment of Mulcairns was undertaken to determine whether he should attend the Victorian Parliamentary Inquiry into Sex Abuse after having a stroke. It was ruled he was medically unfit to attend, despite him still saying Mass at the time. Since then, questions have been raised about why someone who lives independently should avoid giving evidence to the Commission. Fair point. The Royal Commission yesterday confirmed it was yet to decide whether Mulcairns would be called up or not. Now, the Australian, again, great work from them, yesterday attempted to interview him at his home on the Great Ocean Road in Victoria. The former bishop was asked to comment on his attendance at the retired bishop's dinner and on a 1982 meeting attended by Cardinal George Pell, during which Mulcairns advised that paedophile priest Gerard Ridsdale had to be moved out of his then parish of Mortlake. Mulcairns, 84, according to the Oz, appeared in good physical health. He declined to respond to the Australian on either matter before entering his house. Okay, so if asked, it would seem, given his recent social activities, he'll be at the ready to cooperate in person and to the best of his ability, surely. Everyone of significance at the time should front up. This must be dealt with, and the victims must get justice. We'll see where that goes. Can I start this story with the words, what the hell? So what the hell? Police are looking at CCTV footage, hoping to track down the vandal who smashed windows at the Lindt Cafe in Martin Place. Now, we're told overnight at least five rocks were hurled through the windows of the cafe, which, of course, was the scene of a deadly siege, you'll remember. Witnesses say a man was seen loitering near the cafe at the time of the attack, and police want to question a man in his 40s with facial hair and tanned skin. We'll see what develops during this morning and bring you the latest. Meanwhile, the inquest into the siege, which claimed the lives of Katrina Dawson and Tory Johnson will resume today. Yesterday we learnt this mad Monis had a history of protesting against Channel 7 Sunrise program outside its Martin Place studio. Their head of security, that is Seven's, Scott McElvina, said Monis was, quote, very local and passionate. We also learnt from Amanda Morsi, who was courted by this disgrace more than a decade before the siege, declined his offer of marriage because he was secretive and odd. She knew him as Michael Hasten, a 30-something accountant from Romania who drove several luxury cars. She and Monis went on several dates, although they were always accompanied by one or more of her friends or relatives. She said he drove a fleet of luxury cars, including a Merc, a convertible Peugeot and a Jeep with personalised number plates. Eventually he asked her mother if he could marry this Amanda Morsi. Her mother said her daughter was too young and not ready for marriage, and I think they both formed the view that there was something creepy about him. So the latest there, but in particular to the breaking of the windows, we'll see what we can discover for you this morning as the show continues. Now, today diplomats will face a grilling over Australian aid cuts. This is our foreign aid budget. It's the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade's turn to face the Senate estimates in Canberra. Officials from Social Services, Education and Treasury departments will also attend simultaneous hearings about their programs and budget measures. Look, if I have any of those diplomats listening to us through 2CC in Canberra who might be grilled today, having to answer for cuts to our foreign affairs budget, it's just simple. The answer most likely to every question is, look, if Kevin or Julia hadn't wasted so much taxpayer monies, we'd be able to do so much more. That's it. Grab a couple of shortbread creams, cup of tea, smile and say, my job here is done. Stand to your feet and walk out. I mean, really, it is a farce, isn't it, that we have questions coming from those who created the problem to those who are fixing the problem about the necessary pain of the fix. That's what's going on. And meanwhile, we're paying them to do that. Fair dinkum. As I think Joe Hockey said in the House this week, where is Labor's money tree and can I have some of it, please? Good point. Now, that leads me here. We learned from The Australian today, Kevin Rudd and Julia Gillard savage each other in a new ABC documentary, The Killing Season, that will again expose the deep divisions that ultimately destroyed the previous Labor government. You know, I say that, and I read that, and I wrote that earlier in the day, and thought, you know what, was it actually the divisions that destroyed the government? Wasn't the fact that they were just a hopeless government that destroyed the government? Maybe the other part did contribute. Anyway, Ms. Gillard alleges Mr. Rudd was, and this is rather interesting, physically intimidating towards her, describing a quote-unquote bullying encounter in which he acted in a quote-unquote menacing and quote-unquote angry way after a dispute about parliamentary tactics is back in 2007. Rudd rejects this accusation as utterly false and returns fire, accusing former PM Gillard of treachery and betrayal, falsifying events to justify her ambitions, and colluding with former Minister Mark Abib to bring him down. He said, Julia was my loyal deputy, and I don't believe that she would do that of the June 2010 leadership coup. He describes Gillard's relationship with Abib as an internal cabal. Part one, I think, happens next week. Now, all this speculation will be a free kick for the taxpayer-funded broadcast, and that's fair enough, but there is some interest, no doubt, in this. But I have to say, a big part of me is all over the soap opera component. And I might just choose the old test pattern repeats. Maybe. We'll see. Gee, we have some lowlives out there, don't we? Seems we get a reminder every day. A blind man has been injured after a couple armed with a knife forced their way into a home in Sydney's West. The 32-year-old man was with his parents in their South Granville home when they heard a knock at the door. When the man's father opened the door, a man and a woman forced their way inside. He says they grabbed his son and threatened to stab him unless he gave them money. This fellow's a blind man. They escaped with cash and the 32-year-old was treated for minor cuts to his hand. I hope the police catch these scumbags sometime soon. I know they'll be talking about that during the course of the morning. It's too often, isn't it, the case that these sort of incidents are attached to a drug habit. Someone trying to avail themselves of someone else's property in order to fund their habit. Disgusting habit. This ice thing, I'm telling you, is a massive problem for our society that we just can't every now and again talk about, put a band-aid over and think, oh, well, next. I mean, really a massive issue. We might talk more about that if we can find Police Commissioner Scipione in New South Wales later on. I think it's worthy of further discussion. You know, the murky waters lapping on soccer's world body FIFA may be at last in a position to clear a little, maybe. This is interesting. Sepp Blatter is a focus of an FBI corruption investigation in the US. American media reported shortly after his announced shock resignation as president. The New York Times reported the investigation, citing unnamed law enforcement officials and sources familiar with the case, but gave no further details. An FBI spokesman said the Bureau was, quote, making no comment, unquote, beyond last week's announcement by the Attorney General and FBI Director that FIFA was being investigated for corruption. Attorney General Loretta Lynch announced last Wednesday that the US had indicted 14 FIFA executives and sports marketing executives. Accused is a $150 million bribery scheme. $150 million. At the time, US prosecutors said the investigation was ongoing but would not be drawn into whether Blatter may or may not be part of what the future was. But here's the thing. Why did Blatter bother running again if he knew this was coming, other than, and I think this really is the thing, making sure he had the ability to put in place some form of succession plan? Now, I'm just thinking aloud here. We'll see where all this goes. But if you're trying to put in, if you're running for presidency and you claim that office, then obviously you run the joint, right? Right. So if you're running the joint and you've got influence and you've won in a vote, you probably, challengers think, well, that's it for 4 years. So then you get the ability to, I don't know, potentially put in place those people sympathetic to your cause around you to be the next to run the joint. And if there are one or two issues that, were they to be brought to the surface, might be embarrassing and bury the myth of your career, and you had people sympathetic to your needs running the joint, might it be possible for all that to be suppressed? I don't know. I'm just thinking aloud here, just a thought. I have to say this, though, after much consideration, FIFA is the biggest circus of them all. What really pees me off with this, and look, I'm going to quote Les Murray here, the respected commentator. He actually said this. What the Australians did is gave that money. Remember, it cost $45 million, wasn't it, to try and get the World Cup here? What the Australians did is give that money to Trinidad and Tobago for a stadium upgrade. $45 million. Just out of interest, is there any community ground in Sydney or Canberra or Brisbane or anywhere? Kempsey? Anywhere that $45 million or some part of it might not be used to improve for the benefit of local communities? Is that possible? $45 million for a stadium upgrade in Trinidad and Tobago? To quote Murray further, he said, I believe, and that money disappeared and went into, evidently, Jack Warner's pocket or his bank account. Interesting to note that Warner was one of the 18 current and former FIFA officials arrested last week as part of a corruption investigation led by the FBI and Swiss authorities. Look, we are talking millions here, millions. FIFA, return the money, please. Give us our cash back. People should be filthy about this. Absolutely unbelievable. Now, we'll see what develops with this today. The Courier-Mail has done some extensive work, I think 8 pages, on a potential political bombshell. I'm not sure yet if it can bring down a government, but gee, it is something Premier Palaszczuk will have to deal with. I did note that she was to hold a press conference this morning at 9:30, and that's been cancelled, I understand, from Ray's team in Brisbane. So I don't know where that leaves the Premier and what she might intend to say or not say about this today, but the story is this. Impropriety allegations have been levelled against another MP from the Queensland Minority Labor Government, this first-term MP, Rick Williams, who sits on a parliamentary committee, you'll love this, overseeing law and order, has been accused, and I made that point, accused, and I think some of these allegations are untested, so we need just to be careful here. Nonetheless, has been accused of trying to hire someone to have his ex-wife's boyfriend, quote-unquote, done over? Oh, wait, there's more. Sexually harassing a teenager and business impropriety. Williams did not personally respond to the paper's requests for comment, but Labor State Secretary Evan Moorhead said the MP for Palmerstone denies acting improperly. And we have to go with that because he's said that, and the paper does make the point, the Courier-Mail this morning, that these allegations are untested. But you'd have to think, having devoted 8 pages to this Rick Williams, they are of the view that there might be something there. Again, untested. We'll see where that, in fact, does go. In sport, players will be given a maximum 10-day cooling-off period, thank goodness, for any contract they sign under a new rule proposed by the NRL. Todd Greenberg said the current rule that was introduced to allow clubs until round 13 to retain players who sign with a rival club will be scrapped. Yeah, this ongoing willy, won't-he, won't-he, willy thing is just a unnecessary distraction. I mean, if you're of sound mind and you sign the contract, do you really need, you know, in some cases 12 weeks or more just to be sure, to be sure, to be sure? I don't think so. The NRL has been secretly trialling video referee bunker technology, which they say could reduce decision times by half. Let me say it again. Thank goodness the proposed system was trialled over 11 NRL matches between rounds 10 and 12, giving officials the latest video technologies, including touch screens and numerous camera angles to make their decisions. Look, it is very annoying, isn't it, when they go to the video ref and there's a million replays and you go, hang on, I just saw that, you know what to do. You're a referee, make the call, press the button. But they seemingly are reluctant to do so in a hurry. They're also expected to announce a reduction in the number of interchanges in the coming months. It's expected to go from 10 to 6 or to 8. I'm not sure about the bunker technology, but if we get a more accurate result quicker, then surely it can't be a bad thing, even though it sounds like you're on a different planet when you've got a game being played, let's say, at Homebush, and a bunch of people in an office at Chatswood making a decision. It just seems odd. It is a sport, after all. Premier League's Player of the Year, Eden Hazard, has given a masterclass as Chelsea defeated Sydney FC 1-0 at ANZ Stadium last night. Crowd there, 83,598. Didn't quite get to the record they expected, but still outstanding. You've got to say well done, Stuart Ayres, the minister responsible. Really well done to the minister there. And well done also to anyone else connected with making this happen. It's great. I mean, this is a marquee event. You can't compare this to a crowd for any regular other competition. This is one of those great marquee events. You've got the recently crowned English Premier League champs up against Sydney FC being played in Sydney. And what about Sydney FC? Everyone wants to talk up Chelsea, and that's fine, and Tottenham Hotspur, and that's fine. But this team that was defeated in the A-League Grand Final, losing 1-0 on both occasions, I think, you know, pretty fair effort, I really think you have to say. So well done to anyone who attended and for the people that made that happen. In the French Open tennis, Roger Federer has been knocked out of the French Open at the quarterfinal stage, falling in three sets to fellow Swiss Stan Wawrinka. He's the eighth seed. Further sign of the decline of the 33-year-old Federer, who was beaten in the third round of the Australian Open, you'll remember, earlier this year. In the other quarterfinal last night, Frenchman Joe Wilfred Tsonga beat Kai Nishikori. And we'll see, we'll talk about the rest of that through the course of the morning as well. Tonight, the tour of the West Indies, first test at Windsor Park in Rosu, if that's how you say it, or Roseau. The Windies take on Australia. The teams will be announced at the toss. That's about midnight, so we'll get further information on that. If you'd like to be part of the show and raise absence today, all you got to do is give us a call. And that number is 131873. Emails to 2gb.com, 4bc.com.au. This is Luke Grant in the chair for Ray Hadley on this Wednesday morning on 2GB in Sydney, 4BC Brisbane, 2CC in Canberra, 24 after 9.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for Australian fleet sales. Call 1300 used cars.
At Milpera Truck, he's broken down. Milpera Road, eastbound to Queen Street. Another one at French's Forest. Ringer Road, the right-hand turn to go north on Forest Way. At Canterbury Burstwater Main, Canterbury Road. Lane 1, citybound at Burner Street. M4 still rather busy around the Cumberland Highway down to James Roos Drive. Also Victoria Road through Des Moines and Roselle all the way into the city. At Castle Hill, light to flashing amber. Showground Road and Gilbert Road. At Darlinghurst, light to black. Out Oxford Street and Crown Street. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Call Real Insurance on 13 1948 for a discount of up to 30% on your car insurance. Conditions and PDS at realinsurance.com.au. Issued by Hollard Insurance.
All right, the weather now around the listening area. We can tell you in Sydney today, mostly sunny. Penrith 17, Terry Hills 15, Richmond, Parramatta, Campbelltown, tops of 17. Tomorrow, partly cloudy 18, Friday shower or two, and a top of 18 degrees today. In Brisbane 21, mostly sunny. Sunny tomorrow 21, possible late shower Friday and 22. Might be a shower about on the weekend in Brisbane, I have to say. Tops of 23 or 24. Weekend in Sydney, getting back to Sydney, should be pretty clear as well. But today in Brisbane, 21 on the city, 20 at the airport, 20 at Redcliffe, 21 on the Gold Coast, 22 on the Sunshine Coast. Around New South Wales today, Port Macquarie, partly cloudy, 18, St. Mackenzie, 19, and Coffs, 19. Morning frost, mostly sunny, Wagga Wagga, 12. Griffith, partly cloudy, 13. Goulburn, 11. Coomer, 11. Jindabyne, mostly sunny, and 8. Orange, 9. Bathurst, after a severe morning frost, 12. Lithgow, severe morning frost, 11. Mostly sunny at Barrel and soaring up to 11 degrees. In Canberra today, severe morning frost, as we've told you, 13 the top there today. Mildura, partly cloudy in Victoria, and 14. And across Queensland today, from what I read here, it is mostly sunny. Let's go with that, mostly sunny. Cunnamulla, 15. Maryborough, 23. Hervey Bay, 23. Townsville, 28. Charters Towers, 28. Toowoomba, 16. Kingaroy, 19. Charleville, 18. Mount Isa, 26. Longreach, sunny, 24. Emerald, sunny, 23. Mostly sunny at Roma, 18. Dalby, 18. St George, 15. And a Gundawindi, a top of 16 degrees today. 27 after 9. Great to have your company. 131873 is the number. G'day, Luke. Grant says on the email, how are you? Nice to hear from you. How could anyone believe what either says in relation to Gillard and Rudd? I bet they'll both be victims who are hard done by. It's normally the way, isn't it, mate? The ABC might be better spending time and money documenting how these two did so much damage to the economy in order to get to the truth. Yeah, not a bad point. Nice to hear from you, and I appreciate your email. Glenn talks about flags at half-mast today. Now, I am aware of that. In fact, I was alerted to that by Ray's staff earlier in the day. I did make the point of finding out exactly why, and this is due to the state funeral for the Honourable Leslie Johnson AM. And it's happening today at 11 o'clock at the Sutherland Entertainment Centre in Eaton Street at Sutherland. And so that'll be happening today, that state funeral. If you're not exactly sure on who the Honourable Leslie Johnson AM with respect was, held four ministerial posts between 72 and 75, was Deputy Speaker and Chairman of Committees in 83, was Minister for Aboriginal Affairs in 75, Minister for Housing and Construction from 73 to 75, Minister for Works, Minister for Housing. He represented the federal seat of Hughes in the House of Representatives from 55 to 66 and again from 69 to 83. He was appointed Member of the Order of Australia in 1990 for service to the Parliament, public service, and for service to the Aboriginal community. So that's who we are remembering today in a state funeral. That would explain the flags. G'day, Steve.
G'day, Luke. How are you, mate?
I'm really well. Nice of you to call. Did you go to the soccer last night, did you, mate?
Yeah, I did. I went out to watch the game. And
was it good?
Yeah, game was fantastic, mate. Absolutely fantastic. It was a real spectacle.
Yeah.
But then the reason I was ringing, I was a little disappointed in a couple of things. I think no one has rang up and spoke about that. I was in the section, unfortunately, behind the goal where they had the Sydney Chelsea supporters.
Okay.
Look, I'm a Chelsea supporter, but I also support Sydney FC, so I went out to watch what I would assume is just a friendly game between two teams, and everyone's
sure.
in a good mood.
Yep.
And I just think that group behind there was so disrespectful, the things that they were saying and doing, and that, you know, booing the Sydney players at the end of the game, and some of the things they were saying, like, you know, things like F off Sydney. And that, I mean, I think it's absolutely disrespectful. And wow. Those guys who call themselves real supporters, I think it should be shame to themselves. I have my kids there. And the things that they were saying, you're talking about a friendly game. You know, we're not talking about you know, and the language they were using, and those specific guys that I know,
that I
come and join our group. We go and sit with them, and the way they were going on is so, I was disgusted, mate, to be honest.
So, Steve, were these people there as, do you see them at Sydney FC matches, or these were people who are
fans of
Chelsea?
No, these guys are just absolute Chelsea fanatics, absolute
right.
Which is fine.
Are they Australian residents, or are you saying
Absolutely,
that?
Absolutely, yes. They all live in Sydney, which is what sickened me, which is why I was so angry, because
you
can't say F off Sydney when you live here, mate. You know, you should have respect.
Well, whether it's Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne, Adelaide, Udnadatta, I mean, the idea that you're at a public event, surely there are other things more humorous, clever, or appropriate to say rather than F off to the other team.
And they
did
have some really, and they had some real clever songs. I think, you know, there was nothing. No offense, some of them are really good, but when you start abusing the other team just for being there,
I agree.
I think Sydney FC played really well, and they held their heads high.
Well, I made that point. I'm no expert. You seemingly are, because you go to much more, you attend many more games, or watch much more of the sport than I would. But and they've been a bit forgotten here because we've got the superstars in town. It'd be like if Brangelina were here, you know, you're looking for a couple of actors in Home and Away. Who are they? So. Sydney FC are kind of the forgotten part of this this game last night. I thought to only lose 1-0 was fair, or did Chelsea have the handbrake on?
Mate, if they had their full team and playing 100%, they probably could have won by 5 or 6, you know, in all honesty.
Right.
But in saying that, the last 20 minutes, those young guys from Sydney FC were all over them. And you're talking about not just the main 11. I mean, Chelsea should have 30 quality players that are world standard. So in saying that, the Sydney FC boys done so well. And the last, as I said, 15 minutes, we're all over them. Absolutely all over them. But I'm just not taking away from Chelsea. Believe it, they're a great side. But I was just really disappointed. I won't be joining those grubs from Sydney the way they were going. I was disgusted.
All right, mate. Thanks for your call.
All right, buddy. Thanks,
see you,
mate.
Steve. Thank you, mate. Thanks for letting us know. I guess we couldn't expect amongst 83,000 for everyone to behave appropriately. But, I just don't get it. I really... So go to a sport, unless you are unable to control yourself or you've had too much hit and miss, why you have to result in... And you hear it sometimes at rugby league. It's not just the domain of soccer. You probably hear it at union games. You might even hear it at club rugby or... even GPS rugby, or probably anywhere. But people that think it's okay to go to a public area, people pay money to go there, or they even attend for free, who cares? But they think it's okay to F off the other side and just speak loudly in an inappropriate way with kids around. What the hell's that all about? 131873, there's a really interesting column today in News Limited Papers, Miranda Devine's work. It concerns a case that Ray, I know, has spoken about extensively on this program, that of Carnita Matthews. Now, Carnita Matthews was the Muslim woman who falsely accused a policeman of trying to remove her face covering when he pulled her over at Woodbine in Sydney Southwest back in 2010. Fortunately, the encounter was filmed on the police officer's in-car video and it showed no such thing had occurred. Matthews was sentenced to 6 months in jail for making a false complaint. Her conviction later overturned in the federal court, partly because the person who signed the stat deck complaining about police was wearing a niqab and Islamic face covering. The court found the justice of the peace who witnessed the signature couldn't prove that the person who signed the document was in fact Carnita Matthews. This prompted a huge reaction from the public, and as a result, the state government in New South Wales changed the law to require anyone wearing a face covering to remove it to prove their identity when requested by police or public officials. I've got no drama with that. No one should. But as Miranda Devine writes today, there's still a loophole allowing an exemption for people with special justification for wearing a face covering. Now, Harold Scrooby, who's been a JP for more than 40 years, says the loophole leads to confusion and makes it difficult for a JP to fulfil their main responsibility, verifying an identity. Harold Scrooby is on the line. Nice to talk to you.
Morning, Luke.
Take me through how the system works. When somebody asks you to verify their identity, what process do you generally go through?
Well, there are two options. Point two is that I've known you for over 12 months, or I've confirmed your identity using an identification document. That means a license for or a passport. But conversely, there's... Well, go on. Sorry.
But surely that point, if you say they've got a license, so you take the license, you look at the picture on the license, then you must look at their face... You
That's
put one and one equals two, happy days, I'll sign away. If you can't look at their face because they've got some sort of head covering, so let's work backwards here. So I'm there. Hey, Harold, would you please sign me off on this? I've got a motorbike helmet on. You say, can you take your helmet off? I say, oh, sorry, mate, what was I thinking? No dramas. If I've got a balaclava on, probably same thing. If I'm, however, wearing some sort of religious clothing, and it could be for any religion, you would be right to say to me, well, look, hang on, Luke, with respect, or if I'm not Luke, I'm a female, whoever I am, with respect, to identify, I need to see your face. Now, I'm going, well, I want to be identified, so Harold, here's my face. Again, 1 and 1 equals 2, you sign. What happens when someone says, or can someone say, I guess at the point, well, hang on, no, you're not going to see my face, and to excuse the French, you're bugger, don't you?
I'm compromised completely.
Yeah.
It's outrageous, and it says in the stat deck form, I did not see the face of the person because the person was wearing a face covering, but I am satisfied that the person had a special justification for not removing the covering.
What's the special? So we're doing this for all sorts of reasons. Some of those would be security. So there is a special rule for those that don't want to, or for have a religious belief and not show their face. There is a special rule for them, and not one for people who freely go about as they would in Australia with their face open for everyone to see. That's ridiculous.
No, Luke. There's a special rule for the people who aren't wearing a face covering. They've got to produce some form of ID.
It's upside down.
Isn't it a joke?
It is a joke, Harold.
This could be a gun license. This could be a passport. It is the most elementary form of proof. Now, I'm calling on Premier Mike Baird. Writing to Tony Abbott. Tony Abbott made a very good speech, and he went on about giving people the benefit of the doubt.
Hmm.
He said, time has come to stop giving everyone the benefit of the doubt. He was talking about the man involved in the siege in Martin Place.
Yeah.
But he was talking about how many times he was given the benefit of doubt, and in the end he said, there is always a trade-off between the rights of an individual and the safety of the community.
Correct.
And the safety of the community hinges upon documentation.
Of course it does.
Do you remember the Monkees song, I Saw Her Face and now I'm a Believer?
Yes.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see in this document. I want that section one removed. Immediately, writing to Mr. Baird, I'll be writing to Mr. Abbott and the new head of security, because I just think, do you know what worries me, Luke?
Tell me.
How did this get through the Parliament?
100% how did it get through? And you just mentioned to me, Harold, gun licence. So there would be JPs, and without being disrespectful, there would be JPs that would go about doing the job as best they can, but in some situations they might find this whole process confrontational, difficult to deal with, so benefit of the doubt is somehow, you know what I mean? Would that happen?
What happens if I sign a document after not seeing someone's face? That person goes on to committing serious crimes, because I don't know if it's a man or a woman underneath this balaclava or whatever else they're wearing.
Yeah.
What's my responsibility after verifying that that's their signature and it wasn't? Where do I stand on this? What happens if that person then claims that I'm being discriminatory?
Hmm.
Why on earth wasn't this written such that if there are women who want to wear these face coverings, all they have to do is go and see a female justice of the peace?
Exactly.
Show them the face, show them the licence, and everything's simple. No one's going to object to that. But this sort of thing that went through Parliament, where's the Law Society? Where's the Bar Council? Where are the people who should be watching over us? And I totally agree with the Prime Minister. I think Miranda Devine has nailed it on this article.
Spot on.
Calling upon the Premier today to review this form of, or this statutory declaration and amend it immediately.
Yeah, spot on. You're right. Great point, Harold. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Luke.
Good on you. And where's the public safety issue? Surely, given everything that's been said, this is where you don't match up the rhetoric to the action. This is something that should be fixed in a couple of ticks today, by political leaders who pick up the News Limited papers, see Miranda's column. Great work, Miranda. Simply great work. See Harold's comments. Hear this on Ray's show and go, oh, gee, we got that wrong. Quick, fix it now. Done. Deal. All over. But how can someone go for a gun licence and say, oh, no, you can't see my face, sorry. I got these special beliefs. And oh, okay, fair enough, I'll sign that. What? Ridiculous. 1-3-1-8-7-3, 17 to 10. And it's 14 to 10.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for Australian Fleet Sales. Call 1300 used cars.
At Belmore, a smash on Kingsgrove Road near Canterbury Road. Now, Canterbury, a burst water main, Canterbury Road, lane one, citybound closed at Burner Street. Milpera, truck broken down. Milpera Road, eastbound at Queen Street. At Strathfield, the smash, Panorama Road, eastbound just past Concord Road. Traffic building quickly there. Darlinghurst, lights blacked out, Oxford and Crown Streets. Also Castle Hill, Showground Road and Gilbert Road. French's Forest, a truck broken down. Warringah Road, the right-hand turn on the Forest Way, heavy traffic on Woodville Road northbound. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Here's another reason to shop at Coles Express. Drop in for a coffee. Pick up a small, freshly ground 100% Arabica coffee for just 80 cents. Only at Coles Express.
Plenty of emails today. Thank you for them. Oliver says, G'day Luke. So it was Kevin who was a misogynist, not Tony Abbott. Yeah, that in the light of that report today. Next week it'll be on the ABC. The story of Kevin and Julia and then Kevin again. And apparently it got pretty ugly at times. I think she said physically confronting. Amazing. G'day, Phil.
Oh, g'day, Luke. I just listened to the story about these people that don't take their head covering off for their ID.
Yeah.
Do they have a licence photo or a ID photo taken with their head covering on?
No, and Ray's dealt with this before. The official answer from the department is this. We'll ask you to remove your hat or cap or whatever it might be. Head coverings worn for religious reasons may be worn but must be adjusted so that your whole face is visible from the bottom of your chin to the top of your forehead and both edges of your face. There should also be no shadows cast on your face. And they do ask, they do offer you the ability to come in after hours so that photo can be taken away from the public view. So, no, it's not an image of just a head covering. You have to have your face available for the identification, mate.
So if it's available for the ID, why shouldn't it be available for the policeman or
Well, for the JP, I 100% couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's you just do it, don't you? Particularly when we've got heightened concerns about our security. It's a no-brainer. Look, we'd love to be able to give you the freedom to cover your head. Look, you can walk around as Cousin It. Walk around as Cousin It. We don't care. You can hop into a bank at Cousin It. You can hop on your flight, your Virgin flight. Hopefully get into the Platinum Lounge. And have some of my mate Mangan's food there and then fly to Melbourne, hop off and then walk around Melbourne, walk into the theatre down there as Cousin It. But sadly, we live in a time where we need to see each other. Plus, we're a socialised, friendly country. We want to see each other here, don't we? Good point, mate. Thanks for your call. Damien, hi.
How you going?
Good, mate. Good.
Mate, I'm a seasoned member for the Broncos for the last 12 years in a section called Die Hard Fans, okay?
Die Hard Fans.
That's what they call it. So
okay.
I go to the football, I yell out, I scream, you know, I don't swear because there's kids around, I don't believe in it because I was a kid once and, you know, I've got brought up that way and I go with my dad every week. We've been members there for like 12 years. Now, I have the police come up behind me, I sit in the back row every time, coming up questioning, going, you all right, mate? And I have to explain to him, mate, have you heard me swear? No, go away. Now, I'm a passionate football fan, okay? Like I said, don't swear anything like that. And they're always coming up to me because I'm the loud one trying to support my team. I'm not at church where you got to be quiet. You know, people
well, look,
around
I agree. Damien, the point you make is you can go to the footy and blokes are, and you hear them. They're funny. They're clever. At the games I go to, which are Roosters games, you hear the crowd, the members chant all sorts of things. All of them are about promoting the team and they're rarely about having a crack at the other side. And if you do that in support of your team, who's got a drama? But to actually swear and use the other team's names, I think, lowbrow. But no one's saying you can't go to the footy and make a bit of noise. That's part of the fun, isn't it?
It is. And the thing is, I've had this chat with the Broncos chief executive, and he goes, mate, yell out. I said, hang on, people around, you know, you get the people who get on the text messages these days because they go, oh, hang on, I'm here to watch the game. I'm not here. Well, hang on. The atmosphere is a part of the game. That's why you go.
Yeah.
You know, if I wanted to go to church, I'd go to church.
Well, the other point is if a club has a family friendly area, obviously if there's any swearing or boisterous stuff there, then you use that number to indicate which seat you're in. But I understand your frustration, but I also understand our earlier caller's frustration in relation to being there with his kids and having to have them hear that sort of stuff. It's not on. Mate, I'll leave you there because of time, but thank you very much for your call. Steve on the phone has told us that there's a car in the left lane. This is a breakdown, city-bound, just outside the airport tunnel on General Holmes Drive. Be careful there. Traffic bumper to bumper, according to Ben. Thank you for the call, Ben. On Woodville Road, southbound, around Baker Street. We'll see if we can get some further info on that, but I do appreciate those tip-offs very much indeed. 9 to 10. And great to have your company for Ray, who is unwell again today. We're hoping, as you're hoping, no doubt, that he's back on air tomorrow. I know he's got a very busy time ahead. I think the continuous call team are going bush this weekend up into the Hunter. Am I right? I've got someone nodding that I'm not allowed to speak to. On Saturday, they'll be there. And I think Ray was doing football commentary in Queensland on Friday night. I hope he's well enough to do all that. But more important, let's hope he's back on air tomorrow. Look, I know thanks to the Port Macquarie News, Ben Cooper writing today, that Bill Spedding, the Bonnie Hills resident arrested by the team investigating William Tyrrell's disappearance, submitted a bail application to the New South Wales Supreme Court Monday. 63-year-old was arrested, as you remember, on April 22, charged with 5 counts of sexual intercourse with a child under 10 years and 2 counts of common assault. He's accused of 3 counts of having sex with a 3-year-old between March 1, 87 and April 30 of that year. During the same period, look, I have to say, just like you are, ill at hearing it, I'm probably more real even having to read it. It's disgusting. Again, I have to say, because it's what we have to do in a world in which we live, and in the sake of decency, although it feels wrong even to say that these are allegations that have to be properly tested, but these are allegations that need to be properly tested. So let's just remember that. These alleged offences took place in Campbelltown. Magistrate Thomas Hodgson refused Mr. Spedding bail on April 23. Solicitor Rob Hoyles has applied for bail on the basis his client had no criminal history, had strong community ties, and intended to plead not guilty. We'll see what happens there. We'll be getting a decision, we think, on around June 15. Almost 10 o'clock. Latest news is next.
You're listening to Luke Grant, filling in for Ray Hadley, right across Australia.
And here we are back for hour two of Ray's show on this Wednesday morning. 131873 is our number, 2gb.com. Click on feedback, 4bc.com.au. Plenty to do this hour. Well, as I flagged in the first hour, there was a police commissioner, and you heard a report in our recent news about Andrew Scipione addressing the issue of ICE. We might find the commissioner this hour and talk more about that. I think it really is, no doubt you would, really, really important. So we'll do that as well. I had a couple of people on the email make the point and ask the question, did you hear the audio of the brother of the gunman who was featured on Channel 9 News? Yeah, I did. Wondered if we'd be able to play that. Yeah, we might just do that. And I have to say, having heard it a couple of times now, the restraint shown by the police, quite exceptional. Quite exceptional. In circumstances where you call all sorts of names under the sun, it must be very difficult to just cop that and keep a clear mind in order to, you know, try and cool the situation down. Quite exceptional. We'll get to that if we can in a moment or two. Look, I've been sent this too, which I thought was interesting. It's from the Canberra Times in a section which is named the Public Sector Informant. It's a lift-out, I'm told, in the Canberra Times. And it's basically a public service worker advice column. We'll see if we can find more time to have a chat about this later on. But the question was, I'm a public servant of 29 years. I've acted in SES positions. I believe I've proven myself to be a solid worker. Due to a high workload, I've just worked for 13 days straight. No, the weekends were not full days. During a meeting yesterday, my SES band one told me that if we had time for lunch, we weren't that busy. I'm a grown man with a fairly thick skin, but my reaction was to walk out of her office and into a toilet in tears. I ended up going home visibly upset. I texted my boss at 5:30 a.m. telling her I'm unable to come in. Her written response was to ask me where a report was located. I'm genuinely unsure as to what to do. It's an advice column. Worked 13 days straight. Good on them for working 13 days straight, 29 years in the public service, and told that if they had time for lunch, they weren't that busy. And the reaction was to go into the dunny and break into tears. Now, I don't want to, and I'm not making light of this person's aggravation and upset. Obviously, there might have been circumstances leading up to it, but the fact that it appears in an advice column, I do find it kind of odd. And then I think, oh, hang on, it's 2015, Luke. Remember, things are different, and they are different. But there you are. We might address that in further detail later on. In the meantime, I've got plenty of callers and good people to talk to. Let's do that. G'day, Sue.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm from Queensland. Last year, I worked in a state electoral office.
Yep.
I'm a justice of the peace.
Mm-hmm.
A woman came in with a complete headdress on, wanted me to witness some really important documents which could have ended up in court.
Yeah.
I asked her to remove her veil. She refused. I offered her a private interview room with just myself and her, and she refused. So I refused to sign the documents. She then made an official complaint against me to the Justice Department saying I discriminated against her. When I explained to them what had done, they said I did the right thing and always do that. That was in Queensland.
Well, I hope then also, Sue, the people that she complained to then fined her or something for being almost vexatious in making a stupid complaint and using racism in the most appalling, in that term, the most appalling of ways. Does she face any sort of sanction for questioning what you did? Well, she should have.
But I would always do that. I mean, it was
good on you. So you should.
Very important document.
Yeah, of course they are.
And as I said, I did offer her the privacy of an interview room.
And you know what, Sue? We need people like you to say, listen, you need it signed. I'd like to sign it. But there's a give and take here. I need to see your face. If you're not going to show it to me, then no signature. Tough luck.
That's pretty
good on you.
The court, I certainly couldn't say that was the woman that signed it.
Mm.
No way. If I had to.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Good on you to call, Sue. Thank you so much. Peter, g'day.
G'day, how are you?
Travelling well, mate.
Mate, I'll just back up that last caller. I'm a qualified JP in Queensland.
Yep.
And with the edict that's been given out in New South Wales, it's quite simple. If you can't identify the person that's presenting the stat deck, don't sign it.
Don't sign it, 100%.
So even if they're not removing their headdress, I've had occasions where people are trying to get their licences back. They don't have photographic ID. So therefore, I can't identify them. I can't sign the stat deck to get their license back.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's not the problem that the JP that was on earlier today is making out. We're a justice of the peace, not a JP.
Well, look, the reality is, I understand your point, and it's a good point, but the reality is we need everyone to be on the same page, but it should be made as easy as possible because at the end of the day, you're not turning up with a sheriff's badge and a six-shooter. You're turning up with a pen. It should be easy for you to do your job. I think that's the point. Peter, good of you to call. Thank you, mate. George, hi.
G'day, Luke.
Hi.
Hi. Just ringing about the Chelsea fans and swearing.
Yeah, mate.
I don't approve of that, especially living in Sydney and swearing at Sydney.
Mm.
Okay, but about the chanting and swearing, it's all. It's not all too like. I'm a Sydney fan. It's all lighthearted, like. That's just part of it. Like, Sydney FC has it's called an active area behind the goals, and you can't sit there. That's purely just to stand up and chant. And when there's chanting, there's going to be a bit of swearing. That's just the way it is. I've got two kids. I don't sit there, but I went to the grand final, and I had to sit amongst it. But that's just, you know, you got to cop it at that time. But it wasn't that bad.
All right, well, that's a different point of view. What I do like about what you've told me, George, is that it's a designated area where people are going to be standing and chanting and, you know, obviously raucous and rowdy, and that's the way they like to show their support. I still don't think it's okay, even in that area, to, you know, drop the F-bomb or anything else, because you shouldn't have to resort to that. But and people that do want to take their kids, they can cop the loud cheering because I know that's the area. But thank you for clearing that up, and I know what that area is, and that Sydney FC have made that available. It's probably a good thing that they've done. 131873 is a number. It's 12 minutes past 10. I'll play you that audio from the brother of the victim in a moment or two. In the meantime, Dot's there. G'day, Dot.
Hello, Luke.
Hello, Dot.
Yeah, my story's a little bit different to everybody else's this morning. I think it's a really good news story.
Yep, good.
In Tamworth in January,
yep.
I attended the inaugural Bush Balladeers concert for the big screen.
Yep.
A couple thousand people, I believe, attended. Through the night, they said they would give away a guitar. It was a guitar that was signed by all the artists that night. There were about 30 of them all together.
Okay.
It wasn't a lucky dip. You had to say why you wanted to win the guitar.
Mm.
So people canvassed the audience to see why different people wanted to win the guitar. And I said that if I won it, I would like to auction it or raffle it, and all the money raised would go to Aussie Helpers because they help the very people that Bush Balladeers sing about. Anyway, I won the guitar, and now it's on auction on the Aussie Helpers Facebook page, and so far our highest bid is $1,050.
Oh, well done.
Oh, look, I'm so excited. I really am.
That is such a good thing to do, I have to say.
The auction finishes on the 15th of June,
okay.
And I'm in a situation where we're working on a station up in the Gulf and have very limited, we have no internet connections or anything like that.
Tell me whereabouts, is there a place or a town you can point to that describes where you are?
South of Croydon. We're about 130 k's south of Croydon,
okay.
Which is between Normanton and Georgetown.
Yep.
And when I won the guitar, we were at home, which is at Dundara near Harvey Bay,
mm-hmm.
And I thought that I was going to be there and have internet service and do all sorts of things with it. But because that's out of the way, and because I know Ray has a lot to do with helping the Bush people.
He certainly does. I'm looking at some of the names on the guitar, Ann Kirkpatrick, Slim's daughter is there, and Reg Poole is on it. Some of the legends here, Brian Letton is on it as well.
Yeah, and Tommy Maxwell and Graham Roger, who spends so much time out west.
Yeah, good on them. I'm seeing a picture of someone, I'm assuming it's you.
Yes.
On the right, who's that on the left holding the body of the guitar?
Diane Lindsay, she has the hat on.
Okay.
And she's presenting me with the guitar.
Well, look, a million out of ten to you, Dot. I think that's such a generous and decent thing to do. And tell me where I can direct Ray's listeners to bid if they want to bid.
Just straight onto the Aussie Helpers Facebook page,
okay.
Which is www.facebook.com/AussieHelpers. All in lowercase.
Brilliant. Well, look, I know that Ray would love to know the final result of that, so whether you can call or email or the like, so Ray can update listeners at the end of the auction, which goes, I think you said, to June 15. Dot, well done. Brilliant work. Fantastic. And I'm glad we can help promote that very important auction leading to important fundraising for Aussie Helpers. Great stuff, Dot. All the best to you. 131873 is the number. Coming up to 16 past 10.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for Australian Fleet Sales. Call 1300 used cars.
Got a breakdown inside the eastern Stuart Main Tunnel, taking out lane 1 southbound. Once you get past him, good run heading towards the airport. Now Canterbury, Burstwater Main, Canterbury Road, lane 1 closed, citybound near Burner Street. Marylands, you'll find some heavy traffic on Woodville Road, making its way northbound towards the Parramatta area at Darlinghurst. Lights are blacked out, Oxford and Crown Street. Castle Hill, lights are flashing amber, Showground Road and Gilbert Road, and Leppington, the smash on Camden Valley Way at Denham Court Road. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Zero in on your small business at Xero.com. Beautiful online accounting software. Start a free trial at Xero today. That's Xero with an X.
And it's 10:17 on the Ray Hadley Morning Show with Luke Grant. Ray, hopefully well enough to be back tomorrow. G'day, Luke. I need some advice. I've been working 20-plus years in farming. I've been working 3 months straight without a break. I leave home before sunrise and I'm home late every day. I only see my wife and kids occasionally, maybe the hallway at 2 a.m. Won't rain, can barely afford lunch, let alone stop for it. The banks are riding me, the truck's broken, my mates are shooting themselves. Please don't waste my time with whinging public servants. Hey, Stu, that's a very sobering note. Thank you, mate. Nice to hear from you. Good luck. 131873. Good morning, Luke. Do you get the feeling, as I do, that every time Julia Gillard opens her mouth, she loses a bit more credibility? I mean, she's played the bullying, intimidated by mail card just too many times. Someone had said today, in light of the reports about this ABC show next week, that, in fact, the former Prime Minister Gillard needs to come out today with another misogyny speech, this time noting the activities of Kevin Rudd, which is referred to in various pieces as being, I think, physically menacing, or words to that effect. It's a good point that you make, Belinda, and plenty of other people make the same point as well. 18 after 10. 21 after 10. Hopefully Ray back with us all tomorrow after 9 o'clock. 131873 is our number here. Look, the use of the drug ICE is rising, according to latest crime statistics. In the last 5 years, the number of arrests for the use and possession of amphetamines has risen by more than 200%. Frighteningly, statistics suggest 15.5% of people are using ICE daily or weekly. Can you believe this? The effects of the drug are shocking. We know that. It sets off a dangerous combination of euphoria, confidence, energy, and almost superhuman strength. It's almost like you don't feel any pain, so you can do anything. Then coupled with anxiety, paranoia, and severe panic attacks, none of that is a good mix. We're constantly hearing reports of violent crimes committed by people on ICE, whether it be paramedics assaulted while trying to help a user, or horrific traffic accidents caused by people off their face on ICE. The New South Wales Police Commissioner, Andrew Scipione, has been extremely upfront about the risk of ICE to Australian society. Earlier this year, he described it as having the potential to bring the country to its knees. He says it's something police can't deal with on their own. Police need the help of the wider community. And this morning, the Commissioner has launched a new advertising campaign to highlight the role members of the public have in arresting suppliers and busting those manufacturing the drug. And as he rightly says, this is not someone else's problem. This is our problem. That is the police force and the community coming together and saying, here's another one, let's deal with it. The Commissioner's on the line. Nice to talk to you again. I hope you're well.
Yes, you too, Luke. It's great to talk to you.
How often do officers confront problems with ICE users? Once is too much, of course, but it's a lot worse than that, isn't it?
Luke, every day.
Every day,
right across this state. I mean, the figures of the use of that particular drug, often we won't even know when we're in an engagement with somebody that's affected by that drug, but, you know, it'll be in domestic violence, it'll be in traffic offences, it'll be in violent crimes, it'll be in deals, rip-offs, you name it, it will be right across the board. It's a pervasive substance that we need to go to war against.
Absolutely right. And the other side of that coin is the fact that you've got officers there that know that every day, they're more likely than not to encounter someone who might seemingly be doing, well, it could be anything. And as a result of the appropriate interference by police in their behaviour, could have to deal with this drug-crazed, feeling-no-pain lunatic who, you know, could inflict great pain upon them. So we've got to keep that in mind as well. Nearly everybody knows somebody who's been affected in some way by ICE, either the family of the user, the victim of a crime associated with its use. And I think I made the point before we started to talk, and it's a point you made earlier this year, that it's not just your problem, it's all of our problem. What sort of things can we do to help force?
Luke, you're absolutely right. And I might just say, just in closing off on that other issue, you know, we are so fortunate that the men and women of the New South Wales Police Force have got the ticker to step up and take people on, even though they know that these people have this superhuman strength, that they will be completely outrageous in their behaviour and they're incredibly unpredictable. They still go and deal with these people because they need to be dealt with. I can't recommend highly enough the men and the women that go out and do this on our behalf every day. So well done to them.
Yeah.
Look, what we can do is we can first and foremost understand that we all have a problem, and you've done that really well. You've identified what the problem is. You've identified that we've, for a long time now, been saying we need to come together. It's almost time for one of those campaign posters to come out where I think it was a former US president that pointed and said, we need you. Well, we need community now to join us. This fight against ICE is a fight that we all have to have. So today we actually were launching a campaign, and there's a series of posters now. These four posters are simply there to better educate not the person that's trapped in the ICE addiction, but general members of the community about what they should be reporting to us. So it's a start, and let me tell you, it's only part of the solution, because law enforcement will not deal with this problem in its entirety. But it's certainly very, very powerful, and we're looking to get those right across the community. The other thing is it's linked back to Crime Stoppers, and we would, again, I want people to understand the impact that just one call to Crime Stoppers can make. And an example, Luke, 3 years ago we had a single call to Crime Stoppers. It led to the seizure of 585 kilograms of ice. Make no mistake about it. That single call stopped millions of deals from making it onto the street, and it prevented untold harm. No doubt it saved, in my mind, countless lives.
Yeah, that's good. And again, the point you're making there about, all right, these posters, I think you were thinking before about Uncle Sam, maybe we need some Uncle Andrew posters
well,
out there.
Well, we need something, because truly, as I said, this is the fight you've got to have. It's one of those ones, if you're backed into a corner, you actually need to come out and deal with it. And it's been so good to watch the Commonwealth government actually stepping up and saying we have a national problem. And certainly from a state government perspective, my colleagues, secretaries across a number of different government departments have certainly said we want to be part of this, because they realise the impact it's having in schools.
And then that other point there is that the solution isn't one sledgehammer that goes whack and kills it. It'll be a collection of a whole little things that, when together, they add up to this almighty shot to the arm of the community that says, hey, you know what? We're not going to tolerate this. What really concerns me, Commissioner, although it all concerns me, but particularly is people, and you've had great success with your traffic officers, detecting people that might be driving heavy vehicles using substances like this. How dangerous is that? They've got this, you know, hundreds of tons of power, and they're high on this stuff. It's just ridiculous.
Well, see, Luke, that's the other problem. People have said to me, well, look, this is just cyclical. You've had problems with heroin in the past and cocaine. And yes, we have. And yes, they've impacted us. But I've never seen law enforcement officers that have been in this business for a long time are saying there's never been a drug like this. With heroin, you would take your hit and you would probably settle down, probably go to sleep and then relax. With this drug, You're up and going, and you're on a knife's edge for the next 3 or 4 days. You don't sleep for a week, and you're out there driving a truck. They're missiles of enormous danger, potentially. So that's why, yes, you're right, there's been a really big push by the New South Wales Police Force in that random drug testing alongside random breath testing, because we know that there are people out there that are using this drug and driving cars, including commercial vehicles, putting us all at risk.
Of course, Crime Stoppers, it's national number 2-1-800-333-000. One more thing before you go, and I appreciate how generous you've been, but I saw the footage last night on Nine News of the brother of a victim who was shot. Now, let's move away from that, and let me say to you that there were officers there who copped the most vile abuse, the words that were thrown and the terms used around your officers. But I couldn't help, and I've had emails, Commissioner, from listeners who have made the same point, how controlled and calm the officers were in those sort of situations where someone's aggressive and swearing and carrying on. I guess that's part of policing, isn't it? Being able to sum up a situation and try and make it calm rather than deal all the time with the person who's perpetrating the action.
Yeah, Luke, it is. But let me just say, that's why it's so important that we always acknowledge that the strength, and you know, it takes courage to stand there and do that. Yeah. Those men and women, those people that were involved, I haven't seen the footage, but from what I've been told, they were brave in the face of what was outrageous behaviour. It's not acceptable. Police aren't there to be abused. That's not what they're there for. They're there to help community, and that's what those people, those officers would have been doing. You know, I think this comes back in large part to respect issues we have right across community. We've talked about those for many, many years. But aren't we fortunate that there are men and women that will step up and do that on a daily basis and look after us?
Yeah,
we're very, very fortunate.
Great stuff. Before I say goodbye, thanks for hanging around a bit longer. You do a great job.
You're a good man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Luke.
Good to talk to you. All the best to you. That's New South Wales Police Commissioner Andrew Scipione.
Macquarie National News.
Morning, Natalie.
Good morning, Luke. The Lind Cafe in Sydney has reopened its doors after a vandal smashed windows with rocks overnight. The police commissioner says the attack is not linked to last year's deadly siege. Foreign Minister Julie Bishop says Australia will consider any request from Iraq to send more troops to fight against Islamic State terrorists. Football Federation Australia has welcomed FIFA President Sepp Blatter's resignation, describing it as the first step toward changing the culture of soccer's governing body. And a Hooters-style restaurant for women has opened in the United States. It's called Tallywhackers, and the buff male waiters are dressed in red tank tops and short shorts. In sport, North Queensland has confirmed it's re-signed coach Paul Green for another three NRL seasons. Luke, more news and sport in 29 minutes.
And we look forward to that. Thanks so much, Nat. Guy, who's the afternoon presenter on 2MC in Port Macquarie. Hello, Guy. I had a call from a lady in regards to the blimp. It's been hovering around outside this morning in the Port Macquarie area. She asked if you were able to mention it. Well, I am able to mention it. I'm imagining it's the appliances online blimp that I've seen over the Central Coast and parts of the Hunter over the last week or two. I'm assuming it's that. If it's a different one, Guy, let us know. But it's amazing for people in rural areas, I have to say, where there isn't, you know, a daily blimp. Well, let's be honest, any place where there's not a daily blimp, and I think Melbourne's more the daily blimp place, isn't it? You look up and you see this thing, you go, what the hell? There's an invasion here. So that's what it is. And Guy, thanks for your note, mate, and please pass on to our listener all the very best. Hi, Louise.
Hi, how are you?
Travelling well. Thanks for your call.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up the topic of the drug ice again.
Sure, go ahead.
We live in Mildura, and about 3 years ago, I barely even heard of the drug, and now it's at least a dozen times a week I hear about someone I know that's had something to do with it, or they've been arrested, or it's endless. It doesn't end. And I'm just wondering why they don't have tougher penalties for people that are caught selling it or using it even.
So it's a bigger problem in Mildura than what you remember a few years ago. Do you get the sense that the police, and this is in Victoria, are doing all they can, or is their job made difficult? Just tell me about that.
I think their job is made difficult. I don't think it's so much about the police. I think once they get to court, the penalties aren't tough enough, the punishment's not hard enough, so they just come out and do it again. I've heard of people being caught selling it and with a lot in possession.
Yeah.
And they've just been sent to rehab for a few months. And they're being forced to go into rehabilitation. So they come out and they just start doing it again.
Yeah. That's interesting. So maybe we should make the penalties tougher. What about the other point the Commissioner and I were discussing, which is the community taking some ownership of this? In other words, if you see something untoward or you know something, you actually go 1-800-333-000, you tell Crime Stoppers and you're part of the solution. Do you reckon that happens enough? Because I'm not sure it does.
I don't think it does either. I think
we're all too prepared to walk away.
Yeah,
it's a shame.
But you have to think your children are being brought up in this, and do you want your children around it?
Very sensible words, Louise. A delight to talk to you. I do appreciate your call very much. Indeed. 131873 is the number, 2gb.com. Michael, hi.
Hi, Luke. Good morning and nice to talk to you.
You're in Perth, are you, Michael?
Yes, I'm ringing from Perth. I listen to the 2GB through the 2GB app.
Good man. Nice to know you're there.
Thank you. Today is an anniversary, and it affected me, of course. I was in the Navy, in the Royal Australian Navy.
Yeah.
And on the 3rd of June in 1969, 46 years ago, the HMAS Melbourne unfortunately collided with the USS Frank E. Evans.
That was an aircraft carrier, wasn't it?
Yes, the Melbourne was an aircraft carrier, and the Evans was a destroyer. And unfortunately, 74 sailors lost their lives, and I just felt that it was the time to think about them, and today is their anniversary.
I'm glad you raised that, and I'm glad you're able to call and talk about it, and you were on the HMAS Melbourne, were you, Michael?
Yes, I was, Luke, at the time. I was actually watch on deck and saw the black inky sky light up with the number 754, which was the number of the Evans.
What time of day, for people that aren't fully aware of the story, just fill in some of the detail. What time of day was this, and what had you been doing? This was Was it one of those joint exercises?
That's right. It was a joint exercise with the U.S. Navy called CETO, which is the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization. And it was in the South China Sea at 3:10 in the morning. It occurred, and it was a dreadful, terrible morning.
It seems to me, so did you tell me before, Michael, you were on the deck?
I was actually on what's called a three-mic deck, which is the open deck where all the lifeboats are, and underneath the actual landing part of the aircraft carrier. And I was on duty at the time with other sailors, of course, and I had the 12-to-4 shift.
How did you survive, Michael?
Well, no one on the HMS Melbourne were hurt. It was only sailors from the USS Frankie Evans that were killed.
But it was the Melbourne cut in two, wasn't it?
No, it was the Frankie
Evans.
It was
the Evans cut in two.
It was the Evans that was cut in two. Yeah. Unfortunately, we were the ones that cut them in half.
Oh, dear. What do you do on this day? And I'm glad that you chose to share the sad commemoration with us, but I guess it's a tough day for you, mate.
It is.
You okay now? You got family and friends around you and all that kind of thing?
Oh, yes, I have. Yeah, it's taken a long, long time to even talk about this. And, you know, it's 46 years ago, and the trouble is, as you get older, the memory seems to be even more vivid. But when you're younger and, just full of life, that you just continue on. I spent quite a few hours in the water trying to help survivors. And,
jeez.
So it was a bad morning for all of us. Mm. And I just wanted to, and more so to speak to the people in Sydney, because the HMS Melbourne was based in Sydney at that time in 1969.
Yeah. Michael, I wish we could have talked about something else. I thank you for being brave enough to make the call. I hope by making the call that I don't know how you deal with it. Frankly, I have no idea. Thank you for your bravery and for your service. And we're a fair way away from you, mate, but you and I have had the chance to speak today, and you've given me reason to think about a fellow called Michael on this day from every year this point on, and I do appreciate the call.
Thank you very much, Luke. Thanks for
talking. Take care of yourself. Jeez. Wow. He's in the water after it happened. Gosh. Everyone's got a story, haven't they? Amazing. 131873, 22-11. While I was talking to Michael, Ray's good friend Phil Rothfield, the sports editor-at-large at the Daily and Sunday Telegraph, has called through, and I suspect we've got some breaking news about a rugby league player. Phil, thanks for your call. Can you tell us what this breaking news is? Thanks to the Daily and Sunday Telegraph, Phil.
Yeah, hi, Luke. Daily Terry Evans has just announced, or will announce at 1 o'clock this afternoon, that he has rejected the contract he signed at the Gold Coast Titans and will be staying at Manly on a new three-year deal. Press conference at 1 o'clock to confirm. The story is on the Telegraph website now. Daily Terry Evans is staying at Manly. A ridiculous rule that allowed him until round 13 to change his mind. It forced the NRL to change the rules this week, where they'll only have a 10-day cooling-off period in future.
Do you think that change that they announced, mate, a day or two back was brought about because they knew this was about to happen?
Well, I think they must have had a good idea, because the Gold Coast Titans are now owned by the NRL. So obviously, they signed Ali Cherry Evans not long after the NRL came in and with a rescue package. But look, the deal has been in doubt for some time. It's been on again, off again for the last 8 weeks. Finally, it's settled. He's staying at Manly.
Phil, as a lover of the game and another human being, the bloke goes up there, he has a meeting, he has his management, I guess, involved, he has a number of conversations, he feels comfortable, he puts his name on a piece of paper. Doesn't he just have to deal with that?
Well, that's as far as I'm concerned. I don't like the old rule as it was. Look, he even bought a house on the Gold Coast for $1.5 million. But under these rules, Manly can come back, and I understand they got Fox Sports and other third parties involved, offered him a job on television.
Yeah.
And look, they came up with the money to keep him. And good luck to them, because no one broke any rules.
Yeah,
but as far as player loyalty goes, I'm of the opinion that once you sign a contract, once you've had a 10-day cooling-off period, just like buying a house or any other major investment, I think you should stick to your word.
I'm with you. That makes us old school, I think. Phil, what does this mean for the coach? Is Daly Cherry Evans and Jeff Tuvey, are they mates? Will this be the sort of thing that'll make sure that Jeff Tuvey stays a bit longer at Manly? What's your take on that?
Oh, look, Jeff Tuvey and Daly Cherry Evans get on very well, but I don't think it'll have any take on it at all.
Right.
Manly won a winning football team. They haven't won. They lost their last four games last year. They've only won three this year, so that's three from, 17? You know, they're struggling big time. It won't save Jeff Tuvey, I wouldn't think, but it'll certainly keep them there for the rest of the year, and it'll give Manly a huge lift and hoping they can, you know, recover from the bottom of the ladder.
DailyTelegraph.com.au. Good on you, Phil. Thanks a lot, mate.
Thanks, Luke.
It's coming up to 18 to 11. Now, I mentioned earlier today in relation to this Queensland MP Rick Williams, some pretty sordid allegations mentioned in the Courier Mail today. We were expecting Premier Palaszczuk to hold a press conference at 9:30 subsequent to an announcement that would happen. It was cancelled. So that's been left now to Treasurer Curtis Pitt, who has said that there's nothing in the allegations against Palmerstone MP Rick Williams to warrant his removal from a parliamentary committee. This committee, from memory, talks about law and order, and the allegations did suggest that he'd talked to someone about getting a hitman for a former partner and all sorts of other sordid allegations that are untested and on the Courier Mail's website or in your paper today if you're listening in Queensland. He says he doesn't see any reason why Rick Williams shouldn't be an MP. Mr. Pitt also said Williams' pre-selection is a matter for the party. Hello, the party's in government. That makes it a matter for the government, doesn't it? Anyway, that's the Treasurer, Curtis Pitt, the Queensland Labor government, which just holds on to power. And every day there's a headline like we're seeing today is another day to think, gee, I wonder for how much longer. 14 to 11.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for Australian Fleet Sales. Call 1300 used cars.
And just look at the M1 Pacific Motorway leaving Sydney. No problems as you make your way up towards the Central Coast. At Canterbury, we still have a burst water main, Canterbury Road. Lane 1, the city bound closed at Burner Street. M4, some debris on the road. Eastbound, just near the Prospect Highway. RMS crews are on the way to have a look at that. Between Lithgow and Bathurst, roadworks on the Great Western Highway. Speed down to 40 kilometres in some areas. Now, Kosciuszko National Park and surrounding areas. Snow and ice on the road. Take it easy. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
He is stealthy, he is loyal, and you can trust him to find you the best deals on the web. He is Shopping Ninja, your very best friend when shopping online. Coming soon.
13 to 11. Look, just going back to Michael's call. Michael was on board the HMAS Melbourne back when it collided with the USS Frank E. Evans 46 years ago this day. It happened at 3:10 in the morning, and Michael was on board the Melbourne. This was in the South China Sea, and there were 74 American personnel who were killed. This was during a training exercise. The acting commander of the Australian Fleet, Commodore Jonathan Meade, Director of the Department of Veterans Affairs, New South Wales and ACT, Mr. Effie Couchy, and Consul of the US Consulate, Scott Simpson, were all part of a commemoration, I think, a year ago. And one or two callers have made the point, and you're right to do that. I'll just quote Betty, for example. These are the sort of people that serve your nation, and whatever they're entitled to, in order to make them, and I don't know how, and it's wrong to say the words deal with it, but to understand what happened to them, to process it and be in some better shape, to have some sort of future, because I got to tell you, to be honest, and I think I'm a tough bastard, but nonetheless, my heart broke when I heard Michael get upset at the idea that, you know, he was there and he was in the water for so long trying to save people. I mean, gosh, we get asked to do, life sometimes demands of us pretty tough things. But when you hear about what Michael went through 46 years ago on this day, a lot of us get off lightly, don't we? And when you think a country can do something for serving men and women, years on from the incident that, you know, might cause them to have troubles dealing with it. Just give them everything. Help them get through it. Michael, you taught us a lot about what happened 46 years ago and as you as a human being, mate. And I can tell you that there are, without exaggerating, a lot of emails, tens and tens of people who feel for you, having heard what you told us today, and hope that you're all right. 131873 is the open line number here. G'day, Chris.
Hello, Luke. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. Thanks for your call. What would you like to say?
Listening to Commissioner Scipione about putting up posters to motivate people to report this ICE scourge.
Yeah.
There's only one thing that motivates people today, and that's money.
Yeah.
What I suggest is that we put up rewards and then pay for those rewards out of the... When you confiscate proceeds of crime off these scumbags, use those proceeds to pay for the rewards that you offer.
Hmm. Hard
to... I don't know what you feel about
well,
that.
Well, no, look, Chris, very hard to argue with the logic of that. We should be doing... I mean, if we're fair dinkum, and you can never question the commissioner, he is fair dinkum. Lots of other people are fair dinkum, but if as a society we are fair dinkum, sadly, it should be that you and I, and probably you and I do want to do the right thing, but there are some people who don't quite share those values. We should make it as easy and as attractive as possible. So at the end of the day, let's do it. I mean, it's a great prize. The prize is we get to control the scourge of ICE in our society. Let's go for it. 10 to 11. 6 to 11, 131873. We've got a breakdown for listeners in Sydney, Great Western Highway westbound on a bend, very dangerous, in the Blue Mountains at Linden, that is. All right. Thanks, Bill, very much indeed for your call. Quickly before we get to the news, Michael, hi.
Hello, Luke. How are you?
Really good. What would you like to say, mate?
Mate, first thing, Michael from Perth. And people like him, ordinary people doing extraordinary things. They're real heroes, mate. They really are.
Couldn't agree with you more, mate. 100%.
Now, the people running rugby league, what a joke. They've taken a very simple game and complicated the bejesus out of it.
Are you talking about the Daly Cherry Evans backflip?
That's part of it, but yeah. that's the focus. Like, he went up there, he had a look around, he liked what he saw, he came back, he spoke to his wife, he spoke to his manager, loved it, signed the contract. I believe the 10-day cooling off period was prior to him signing the contract. This 10-day cooling off thing, that's a joke. He went up there, he saw, I think he's playing games. However, he played within the rules. And I'm not just picking on Daly Cherry Evans, I'm picking on anybody that was sort of involved in that cycle of thing.
Yeah.
But however the league has created it, they should hang their heads in shame.
I couldn't agree with you more, Michael. Very good point. And let's not forget, he also bought a house up there. So he wasn't kind of, oh, I wonder if I should. Thanks, mate. Great offer from Nature B, the Queen's Birthday long weekend coming up. Everyone loves a bit of extra time off. If you need the energy that you will need for a long weekend, Nature B's got the right royal special offer. It's the offer everyone loves because you get 1 extra month supply of Nature B for free. Order your 6 month supply for just $99.95. Get a whole extra month supply for nothing. Call 1-800-147-009. Order today or visit the website naturebee.com. But hurry, it ends June 8. 1-800-147-009, naturebee.com. The Ray Hadley Morning Show with Luke Grant on this Wednesday morning. News is next.
You're listening to Luke Grant, filling in for Ray Hadley, right across Australia.
Thank you for your company on this Wednesday morning for Ray, who's unwell today, but I am now assured we'll be back tomorrow. You beauty, stay in bed. Not that I don't like doing this, what was I thinking? But no, Ray will be back tomorrow morning. That is very good news. Now, look, I wanted to mention this. We did have some callers about it and some emails earlier in the show, and given the fact that we had that breaking news from Phil Rothfield about Daly Cherry Evans staying at Mount Inara and not honouring the deal with the Gold Coast, plus our chat with the commissioner. And I made the point to him that I thought it was extraordinary how, and let's not be silly here, we have police officers and others who are employed to do a very difficult job, and we assume in that whole process they will be professional in the way they discharge their duty. And I thought that was in evidence yesterday. Police are searching for a gunman who allegedly shot two people in the southwest of Sydney, you'll remember, on Monday night. It was about 20 to midnight. 31-year-old Bilal Helu was sitting in a black Mazda with his girlfriend Duha Chukchuk on O'Donnell Avenue at Greenacre. Now, it's believed they had just arrived home to Helu's house when another car pulled alongside them and an argument broke out. Helu was allegedly shot multiple times and his 27-year-old girlfriend was also hit in the shoulder. Police say there's no doubt the gunman was aiming to kill Helu. Helu and his girlfriend are recovering in hospital and police will speak with them, obviously, as soon as they can. Detectives are searching for the shooter but are getting no help whatsoever from the victim's family. Gee, that annoys me. Fair dinkum. Does it you? So, no, we wouldn't be having an argument with anyone to the extent that they might want to shoot, you know, this fella and his girlfriend. No, we wouldn't know anything there. Gosh, doesn't that annoy? That just... Again, talking before about we all being part of a solution with this stuff, and there are people who you would imagine, and we'll let the court test all this out, and we'll let the police do their work, but it does change the argument a little when the police tell you that they're getting no help from the victim's family. Look, I don't know if you saw Nine News last night, but they had some footage of the way police were spoken to by the shooting victim's brother. I do want to make the point that this fella just had his brother shot. Okay, let's keep that in mind. Let's also keep in mind that the police seemingly aren't getting any help. All right, let's also have that in mind. It's worth listening to. Just an eye-opener as to what police have to deal with almost on a daily basis. The composure of the officer and his colleagues in the face of this abuse, I think, is remarkable.
What the f*** am I going to tell you? Well, his name's Ian Alzaila, that's it.
You know what? Lower your voice. Okay, lower your voice. I appreciate you're upset, but lower your voice.
Look, don't give me criticism like you're f***ing idiot. Who's criticizing? Talking to me like I'm a f***ing idiot.
Who's criticizing you?
I'm asking you a question.
You're the one yelling.
I'm the one that f***ing needs question answers, not you, you f***ing moron.
Yeah. How do they keep a... I suppose, again, the deal is we pay them and they've got to be professional, and they are. But in very trying circumstances, that must be difficult, don't you think? 131873 is the number. Glenn, g'day.
G'day, Luke. How you going, mate?
I'm well, Glenn. Thank you for calling, mate.
But look, I know what's going on. I've just passed Central Railway Station. You know the park there you got on the right-hand side?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a heap of people, about 150 giant people gathering there. It looks like whether they're wardens or not, some have got yellow hats, some have got red safety hats on, so I don't know whether there's an evacuation somewhere nearby or they're just doing the drill. But yeah, there's a lot of movement there at the moment, mate, so
all right.
Just be aware of it.
Glenn, thank you for sharing that news, and people have heard that now, so they'll be careful in the area. And I know we've already put in calls to police, and we'll see what they have to tell us, Glenn. So keep your ears on the radio, and thank you so much for the information. That's kind of you to ring in and let us know. I also have to tell you, we have spoken to the Gold Coast Titans. This is in relation to Phil Rothfield, who told us about his breaking story that Daly Cherry Evans is staying with Manly and now not heading to the Gold Coast. The Titans say they are none the wiser and have not heard anything from Daly or Manly about him changing his mind. You know what? People love knocking Manly. I'm not going to knock Manly at all here. They're doing what they're doing within the rules. But how the hell are we going to get people to honour their word when they can't be decent in the way they conduct themselves? If that were to be true, that, oh, no, we'll just have a press conference here and the Titans can find out by watching Sky News or listening to Phil speak on Ray Show. Fair dinkum, that's pretty poor, isn't it? Don't you think? I'm just going on what I've been told. If the situation's different, then, you know, I obviously take all that back. But one thing I won't take back is that when you agree to do a deal, to the extent that you go up there, have a look around, buy a house, etc., you know what? You've just agreed to do the deal. 131873 is the number. Stuart, g'day.
Hey, Luke, how you doing?
Travelling well. What would you like to say, Stuart?
Luke, on the back of a caller just before the news,
yeah.
I have an idea about a reward program, which I would like to call Proceeds Against Crime, where instead of having rewards after the fact, try and tie up loose ends, actually having a very well advertised reward system up front so that any advice, information that leads to a major conviction has, you know, $50,000 for a drug deal, $100,000 for a murder, anything like that, a huge amount of money up front, so that any bad guys sitting around being wannabe gangsters, looking around the room, every single one of the people there are in for a payoff of some 50 grand to dob these people in. It would have to knock criminal enterprise on its head.
And, and based on proceeds from crime that had been confiscated previously by the system.
Well, yeah, of course, that would be a good place to use the money, take the money from, but it doesn't have to be that. Imagine the police resources if every half-baked wannabe gangster was on an earn, 40, 50 grand, whatever, 10 grand for something simple, 50 grand for something advertised up front. How could any crime boss trust anyone in the room when they're on a payout like that? It would have to save the police so much work.
I tell you what, it's a fascinating point. I guess the argument that, doesn't cut it down,